Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Supreme Court today upheld President Trump's travel ban on 7 primarily Muslim nations. Though I think they should only uphold the ban if Trump can name all 7.
Well, there's Iraq, Iran, Sharona.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth welcomes back MSNBC's Chris Hayes. After that, Chris rushes through the halls of 30 Rock to his own studio while late night producer Henry Melcher asks him a few more questions. But first, a closer look.
In the aftermath of his family separation policy, President Trump is now trying out a new tactic, circumventing due process for detained migrants. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Trump has been getting out on the road to support GOP candidates around the country. On Saturday, he was in Las Vegas to support Nevada Senator Dean Heller. And Trump did what he does for all Republican candidates he's trying to help. He talked about everything but the candidate.
I said, where do you want me to go? Well, sir, you're making a speech here, then there, then you're doing 2 roundtables. I said, what's this all about?
I read a story in the New York Times recently about things that we do and they say we didn't, or it's just horrible. I mean, we have a good chemistry together. Kim Jong-un. The Japanese are great warriors. They're great warriors. Our companies have been just taken like we're a bunch of babies. We're the piggy bank that everybody likes to rob from. The news back there, fake news. They said, okay, great. Let's leave it for Trump. Let's leave North Korea for Trump. Let's leave trade for Trump. Let's leave immigration for Trump. They left us a lot, but I'm actually having a good time.
Yeah, sure. You might be having a good time when you're riffing in front of a crowd like a stand-up, but when you're actually doing the job of president, you look like a guy who stuck a Lego up his butt and just realized he can't get it out. Now, because Trump's one political skill is his inability to feel shame, he proudly brags about things that most other human beings would be too embarrassed to say out loud. For example, Trump came up with a new nickname for the Democrat running against Heller, Congresswoman Jackie Rosen, and acted like the nickname was a stroke of genius.
Should I mention her name or should I not? Huh? I have a great nickname for her, actually, but I'm not going to. No, we shouldn't do it. All right, I won't do it. Wacky Jackie.
Good job, man. You might not be qualified to be president, but you're totally qualified to work for the New York Post. That is not a great nickname. You just thought of a word that rhymes with Jackie. He acts like he was up all night surrounded by crumpled papers trying to come up with the perfect name.
Dumb Jackie? No, that's not it. Crazy Jackie? Oh, I'm getting closer. I can feel it. Oh, Eureka, Wacky Jackie. Oh, Donald, you've done it again.
And also, I'm sorry, you don't get to call anyone else wacky. Of all the politicians we've ever had, you are by far the wackiest. You hugged a flag. You touched a glowing orb. You pretended to drive a fire truck. You shouldn't live at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. You should live at 1602 Pennsylvania Avenue and be the White House's wacky neighbor. But Trump, of course, remains obsessed with the border, and he keeps lying about our relationship with Mexico. On Saturday, he once again lied about our trade deficit with Mexico, which he said was $100 billion. It's actually much less than that. But watch how proud he is of the fact that he knows the difference between millions, billions, and trillions.
Mexico makes over $100 billion a year. It's hard to believe. It's, you know, you say these numbers, $100 billion, not trillion, not $100 billion, not million, fortunately, not trillion, very fortunately. But think of it. So $100 billion a year we lose on trade.
Oh, my God. He really does love words that rhyme.
It's billion, not trillion, not million, which I learned from a civilian. At the zoo's reptilian pavilion.
Trump also lied about our current immigration laws. Now, all migrants have due process rights as well as a legal right to seek asylum. But Trump falsely complained that if a migrant puts a foot across the border, we have to allow them to enter the country.
Our immigration laws are a laughingstock all over the world. We're the only people. People walk in, they put a foot in. Please, would you like to register? Other countries, they say, get the hell out of here. They do that. They have to do that. We say, you know, they want to hire now 5,000 more judges so that a person puts the toe on the land that we have to go to trial. This is crazy what we're doing.
No, it's not crazy. It's called due process, and it's in the Constitution. Now, I'm not surprised Trump hasn't read the Constitution or that he doesn't know how the law works, but I am surprised he hasn't even seen the opening credits of Law and Order, because then... he'd at least know that in the criminal justice system, there are two separate groups. The police who investigate crimes and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. He'd also know that Benjamin Bratt never ages. But it shouldn't surprise us that Trump doesn't think immigrants are entitled to due process and human rights because he has repeatedly talked about them using racist, dehumanizing language, and he's not the only one. On Friday, Fox and Friends argued that we shouldn't have as much empathy for immigrant children as we do for American children.
We just can't let everybody in that wants to be here. And this is, these are not, like it or not, these aren't our kids. Show them compassion. But it's not like he's doing this to the people of Idaho or Texas. These are people from another country.
Damn, and that's their morning show. I mean, let me finish making my coffee before you make me spit it out. Brian Kilmeade is such a dumbass, he had trouble thinking of a second state. Idaho and any one of the other 42 states. 43! Our government is right now committing enormous human rights abuses against migrants and their children. In fact, even now, the Trump administration is using the more than 2,000 kids is leveraged to get their parents to leave the country.
At a detention center outside Houston, a migrant and lawyers say that people separated from their children are being told they can reunite with their kids at the airport if they agree to sign a voluntary deportation order right away.
So the Trump administration is using kids as hostages to get their parents to sign voluntary deportation orders. That is straight up evil. At this point, Trump's going to show up to his next rally stroking a white cat or, if he can't find a cat, Rudy Giuliani. So more than 2,000 children have been separated from their parents, and the Trump administration is using them as leverage. And yet Trump officials always see themselves as victims, as we saw yet again this weekend with White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says she was out for dinner last night in Virginia when she was refused service at a restaurant because she works for the Trump administration.
Here's what the press secretary for President Trump tweeted out. She writes, quote, "Last night I was told by the owner of Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia to leave because I work for President Trump, and I politely left. Her actions say far more about her than about me. I always do my best to treat people, including those I disagree with, respectfully and will continue to do so."
That's right. Sarah Sanders says she always tries to treat people respectfully. Let's see that respect in action.
I'm not going to comment on the attorney-specific comments that I haven't seen.
It's in the Bible to follow the law.
That's not what I said, and I know it's hard for you to understand, even short sentences, I guess.
He can't understand short sentences. The guy you work for can't remember anything unless it rhymes. Now, clearly, anyone who works for Donald Trump cares not one iota about civility. Donald Trump is the barefoot on an airplane of presidents. But if you're really concerned that not serving Sanders is somehow uncivil, you could serve her, but do it in the style that she serves the American people, with her dismissive expressions and low-energy attitude. I'm gonna take your order, but you're gonna get what you get. The same goes for heckling Stephen Miller, who was reportedly called a fascist at a restaurant this weekend. I get it. He's the architect of Trump's cruel immigration plan, and there's a lot to be said for publicly shaming him. So if you're gonna do it, have fun with it. Catch him off guard. If you're Stephen Miller's waiter, you could just go to his table and no matter what he says, politely respond, I'm sorry, I don't speak Spanish. And when he says, I'm not speaking Spanish, say to the room, does anyone speak Spanish? And when he restates, I'm not speaking Spanish, say, no hablo español. And when he screams, I'm not speaking Spanish, I'm speaking English, I think you'll feel very satisfied. I'm not saying I want everyone who works for Trump to be kicked out every time they go to a restaurant. I just want them to worry that they will be for the entire meal. Because that is just a taste of the unease and dread so many people feel every day because of Trump's policies. On edge, looking over their shoulder. I want them to have to say things like, no, I just look like Corey Lewandowski. This has been A Closer Look. Our guest tonight is the Emmy-winning host of All In with Chris Hayes, which airs weeknights at 8 p.m. on MSNBC. Please welcome back to the show our friend Chris Hayes, everybody. How are you?
I'm great.
Welcome back. You went down to McAllen, Texas.
Yep.
And I was very glad you weren't the only one who went, but I had a lot of respect for people who went down there to actually see what it was like on the ground. What was your biggest takeaway from what we had been told about a place like McAllen, Texas, and what it was like actually being there?
You know, the two biggest ones, the first is that this idea that this is chaos and they're being overrun is preposterous. I mean, people were just like, what are you even talking about down there? It's like, this is life. Yeah, we live in McAllen. Reynosa, Mexico's across the border. And, you know, people come in, they go back for years and decades and actually centuries in American life, right? This has been a part of the country where people move back and forth across that river. The idea that there is some crazy invasion happening was just entirely preposterous and absent from everyone I talked to there. Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing. The second thing was just the level of both courage and desperation by the people showing up at that border. I mean, the stories you hear, the cartels come and they tried to recruit my oldest son and he said no and they shot and killed him. So now I have my youngest son and I took him on a 2,000-mile journey to come up here, to come to your door, America, and be like, please take me in because I don't want to give the cartels my only other living son. Those are the kinds of stories you're hearing when you're watching the president and other people and his allies talk about these people like they're vermin who's infesting the country. You're talking about literally some of the most courageous people in the hemisphere.
It is... I mean, that's why I'm so happy that people went down. Melania Trump also went down there, to her credit, to go down. With that said, Donald Trump, he went to Duluth, Minnesota.
Oh, you're just going to move right past the jacket.
I mean, I don't even know what to make of the jacket. The jacket, the amount of did she know, did she not? I mean, I feel like it's something, you know.
She's going to get a face tattoo that says, I hate all of you.
Yeah.
And everyone's going to be like, oh, what does it mean? I don't know.
She's like a magic eight ball that doesn't have a dye in it. So you just shake it, and it's just black water. So that, I mean, I'm like, I guess we could keep trying, yeah, but I don't think we're ever going to get an answer.
She went down there, yeah.
She went down there. Donald Trump went to Duluth, Minnesota to rage about the immigration party. The immigration problem, I should say.
It was the most perfect moment that encapsulated what this is really about. We're down in McAllen. We're talking to folks in McAllen. We're talking to a guy I talked to, had a conversation with 20 years in CBP, you know, the border protection. I talked to lawyers for migrants and people that offer them, you know, care. And they're talking about what the situation. Meanwhile, he flies north to Duluth. And in a huge stadium of folks all keyed up in Duluth is talking about the scourge of the border. And we're down the border like, what are you talking about? Yeah. But that's the whole point. He did this on the campaign. You know, he would go to Kenosha or he'd go to somewhere in Ohio and talk about the border and people would be chanting, like going nuts about it because it's not actually the border, right? It's this idea of invasion. It's this idea of the country's changing in ways they don't like. The border is a convenient metaphor for that anxiety.
Obviously, immigration has been framed as a problem for a really long time. Is it safe to say that the real issue is that there are certain people that don't see it as an immigration problem, but as a diversity problem?
More than that, an existential problem about what the country is. I mean, Stephen Miller is very clear about this. Stephen King, the Iowa congressman who tweeted literal Nazi propaganda a week ago, these are people that really think that the nature of the country existentially, America won't be America if it changes too much demographically. And they see themselves as guarding against that eventuality, and they're very clear about that. And that's why it's very hard to come to compromise with these people about legislation. So even when you go and you say, we're going to put money into border security, which we've done every year, border security numbers are through the roof. We're going to have more people patrolling the border, which we've done every year, there's more people patrolling the border. They say, okay, now let's strike a deal. And they say, no, we don't want a deal. Because what we want to do is change the demographic tide of this country to preserve the white majority we have now.
What happens now moving forward in terms of, first and foremost, these separated families? Do you have any optimism that those 2,000 children are going to be reunited with their parents?
I hold out optimism if only because I think that the public pressure has had some effect. Perversely, as you mentioned at the top of the show, there's now this kind of choice that's being offered, which is like you can get your kid back if you agree to be deported and you renounce all your claims to asylum. So I think a lot of people are going to be deported, reunited that way. But it's going to take sustained public pressure. I mean, what's very clear is we broke a story a year ago when they first started thinking about this policy. And they thought about it, and they crafted internal procedures about it, and someone leaked us documents.
This is the separation policy.
Child separation policy. People were so freaked out about it, and they cogitated about it for a year, and they implemented it. They had no plan to reunite these families. They had no plan because they didn't care. I mean, that's what I think is so shocking about this whole thing.
So 2017, you break this story. Obviously, it takes, up to near a year to come through. Were there people in the administration who knew it would play like this?
I think so. And I think the reason that it didn't happen was precisely because the experts, there are people who work in the Department of Homeland Security and in the asylum office and things like this who understand that you can't do this. And I think they warned against it successfully. I think the president, in a fit of pique recently, has been ramped up about how stressed out he is about the border and the invasion and the infestation that's coming over it. And I think he managed to prevail on his advisors against a lot of the better judgment of the civil servants in those agencies to start doing this.
So then he signs an executive order, which ostensibly says we're going to get these families back together. He says, on television, he just couldn't. It was too awful to have families be separated. What do you think happened there for him to ultimately reverse himself? Although we are hearing whispers now that he's saying he wishes he hadn't done that.
I think the president sits in the White House and watches cable news all day.
Yeah. Good for you.
Good for us, maybe. Bad for the country, probably.
Yeah. And probably not a ton of MSNBC.
Yeah. Although, more than I think he would ever admit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's times where it's very clear. He does a lot of hate watching.
Yeah.
Which, again, if you're hate watching, cool. Like, whatever. I don't judge.
They all have to watch the commercials.
We make no discernment. No, I mean, basically, I think he's sitting there and he's watching himself take a beating on this in public opinion and feels like he has to walk it back. And I thought it was a significant moment in the history of this administration because we've seen him penned in before by the courts, when they came out against the travel ban or DACA. We've seen him penned in by Congress when John McCain gave the thumbs down for ACA. This was really the first time that I felt like civil society, in a broad sense, basically kind of stood up and said, no, you can't do this.
You mentioned civil society. I will segue to civility. That seems to be the conversation today. It's a tricky thing to talk about because I think we all, we all would expect to be treated civilly. Like, we all want that. How do you feel about, right now, a Republican saying that there is now a lack of civility?
I mean, look, I understand. I want to, acknowledge what you're saying, which is I get people's impulse. And I don't think it's a bad impulse to have of, don't yell at people or be, I get that. That's a human and understandable part of people's impulses around this stuff. And generally, I think that's a good guiding post for people. I will say this, that, look, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, for example, is one of the most powerful people in the world. Mm-hmm. And in a very real and tangible sense, the defining feature of a free society is that you can tell one of the most powerful people in the world in your government, get out of my restaurant.
Right.
Like, that's genuinely, like, a thing that makes a free society. And now, people can say, like, that I don't think they should do that or that's rude, and I totally get people on either side of that. But in a real deep sense, like, hectoring, yelling at public officials, I mean, I covered all the Tea Party town halls in 2009. That was a festival of yelling at public officials. And in the same way, that's actually an important right to preserve. So I think sometimes this conversation about civility can paper over a lot of what is actually just what politics looks like.
And, you know, I feel like lost in this, obviously, Sarah Huckabee Sanders in her tweet framed her. She focused on her own politeness and politely leaving.
Right.
It does seem as though she was also politely asked to leave.
Now,
yes. Now, again, you know, at the end of the day, I think if you're asked to leave a restaurant, you don't look back and go, they were so nice about it.
Right.
But
They did comp them the cheese plate.
Yes. Yeah, that's no small thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it did strike me as interesting that the woman who owned the restaurant, she went and asked her staff, she made it very clear that she had she had an ethnic staff, she had a staff that were gay people on her staff that made it difficult, and she actually asked them their opinion, which
I thought it was I feel like my basic principles here are nonviolent action in dissent or in protest, sort of across viewpoints,
yeah,
is part of what American political life is about. And, yeah, you know, that's like, and I think people feeling moral urgency about a 12-month-old who is sitting in some facility 1,000 miles away from her mother, who's been torn away from her, I think feeling some sense that, like, this is a crisis, this is a moral crisis that requires me to take some extra action, again, within the sort of confines of, you know, what's protected under law and our democratic sort of principles, I think that makes a lot of sense.
It's always so great to have you here. Thank you so much for making the
Thank
time
you,
for
man.
Us. Chris Hayes, everybody. All In with Chris Hayes is weeknights at 8 p.m. on MSNBC.
Hi, this is Andrew from Late Night. It is 7:02 p.m. Chris, you are running to your show, which starts at 8. But you're just down in Texas. How is preparing for a show there differently than when you have the luxuries of your studio?
It's hotter.
Yeah.
Sweatier.
Yeah.
You definitely have to have a Mophie. You know what a Mophie is?
I have no idea what a Mophie is.
It's like a backup battery pack for your phone.
Oh,
key,
sure.
Key part of being on the road.
Yeah.
You know, NBC is amazing. They have, like, all this tremendous infrastructure.
Right.
You know, you're just, like, on your feet and in the car all day.
Yeah.
But you also do, you just, like, being in a place and talking to people who are there will always make you better informed about something, always. Like, you just,
yeah,
like, there's a sort of, like, even just process of osmosis where you're, like, in a parking lot and, like, you strike up a conversation with a guy who's, like, a supervisor for CBP for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
mm-hmm.
telling you what that experience is like. You just don't have that, you
yeah.
know, when you're, like, in the studio. And so it always, to me, like, brings a tremendous amount of, I just learn a lot, and then I think, like, that brings a lot of depth to the coverage.
Yeah, it will show in the coverage too. We were talking earlier about how you learn new things about the story even though you've been covering the story for over a year.
Yeah, we first got, like, leaked documents about their plan to do this
right
back in March, you know, not mm-hmm. even a month after inauguration. But yeah, like, being down there and talking to like a lot of the advocates and, like, the lawyers who are working with these populations all the time,
right,
who are basically incommunicado. I mean, that's part of the thing. Like,
yeah.
They're in these facilities. They get to talk to a lawyer, but, like, you can't go in as a journalist and be like, "Hey, hi, how are you?
Right.
Can I interview all the people you guys are holding?" Like, that doesn't happen. So
yeah,
you can learn. You just learn so much by talking to lawyers who are in there communicating with folks every day.
Yeah. What are your strategies when you go down to Texas and you're just getting, they're putting up a wall between you and everything?
You know, you find your way around it, right? So for us, the lawyers were a key way of getting around the
uh-huh.
blockade. I
uh-huh.
mean, they were not letting people in except in these very managed stage tours. You know, they've been giving us photos. They don't let us take photos. They don't let us interview people. But, you know, counsel does get in there.
Uh-huh.
So we were talking to a lot of, like, the federal defenders who were talking to their clients. We were talking to people at RAISIS and Texas Civil Rights Project,
right,
because they all do have access to these people. And then there are people who, like, my colleague Mariana Atencio was across the border in Reynosa, where people had sort of stopped and gone back, and she mm-hmm. could talk directly to folks. And other colleagues of mine were in, like, Guatemala. So you had all these opportunities to talk to people who had sort of been run through the system.
Right. Last question I want to ask you. We chatted about this earlier as well. When you were a reporter before you had the backing of NBC, you were saying it was easier in some ways and harder in others.
Yeah, I mean, it's harder
when you went on the road.
Right, it's harder because like you don't have any money and you're like crashing on couches.
Right.
And a lot of times you call people up and they have no idea. Like they're like, why should I talk to you? Yeah. But the flip side of that is that you have anonymity. Mm-hmm. And when you're anonymous, you can go and be in a crowded room where people are doing things and you don't have a big camera equipment and no one recognizes you from TV and mm-hmm. they'll talk to you and just sort of go about what they're doing anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're, you know, when you're on television, people do recognize you and you do have all this gear, like you tend to kind of have a sort of effect on the environments you walk into.
Right.
And there's just no way to not, for that not to change things.
Yeah. So. Well, it was great reporting. Thank you for your, thank you for doing that. Thank you for being the show and good
all
luck
right.
tonight. You've
Thanks
got
so
about 55 minutes.
All right. Let's
Thanks,
go
buddy.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot. And someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.